KPFT.org or on TuneIn Radio today. KPFT, Houston.
Unruffled beat of Ray Lynch's Cloud Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Wednesday. It's my favorite time, and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston. 90.1 FM on your dial locally, and KPFT.org live streaming to the internet anywhere. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts. Dr. Hank Rubicek, our show's founder. Greg Audell, appearing with Floyd the Wonder Dog, as always. And Dr. Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. These guys are not only gifted hosts, they are also great storytellers. Rounding out our team are our chief production engineer and media director, we're waving at her now, Nicole Rocherlin, and our intern, Tatiana Gago. Together with our guest storytellers that we bring on the show every week, we celebrate the power of story. And today is a special day to celebrate many stories on many levels. So let me start by saying happy 4th of July. It's a terrific day for friends, family, and frolic. But let's not forget the importance of the day. There's history that fuels this day, so here is a quick lesson to set us all straight. The Continental Congress voted on July 2nd in 1776 to declare independence from the British Empire. Over the next 2 days, they made changes to a draft of the Declaration of Independence that Thomas Jefferson had presented to them. And on July 4th, representatives from each of the 13 original colonies signed it. John Adams wrote to his wife Abigail that the 2nd of July would be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. Well, okay, he was off by 2 days. 1 year later, on July 4th, 1777, Philadelphia marked Independence Day by adjourning Congress and celebrating with bonfires, bells, and fireworks. And since then, the 4th of July has been annually celebrated with community using food, fire, and noise. Just like that first time in 1777. Okay, that's the short course, but tonight we have another treat. My guests will help punctuate the power of what we expect from Independence Day with food. So we're going to be talking about stories of families or being away from family, being alone. We're going to talk about food, and we're going to talk about fun. My guests tonight are Dr. Anais Malpica and Greg Audell. Anais is an MD Anderson pathologist, and she was on the program, was it a few weeks ago or I'm getting old? It was a few months ago.
A few months ago.
Okay. Well, at least it wasn't a few years ago. It's bad when I miss months to years. But she was here to share stories about her family's journey from Spain to Cuba to Venezuela. I think your son's comment was, I've lived through every civil war.
Exactly, without being there.
Without being there, right. And for all of you out there in Radioland, Greg is a familiar name because he's a co-host of this program. And for the sake of tonight, he's a foodie. You know, I gravitate to foodies. There's just something I know about.
For the sake of tonight, what are you talking about? I'm a foodie every night.
Greg and I had hot dogs last night.
Oh, they were so good.
And the French fries, too.
Absolutely.
And the beer wasn't bad either.
And I'll tell you, you know, there's really no holiday, I guess, other than Thanksgiving that I associate with food. When I think of July 4th, lots of good memories come to mind, but so does fried chicken, homemade ice cream, potato salad, and then it just keeps going. And I don't think I can think about July 4th for 5 minutes without going back to the food of the 4th.
Oh, yes, and I think you eat food all day long until you have the fireworks, and then you eat and drink a little bit more and make some more noise.
I haven't done that today. Everything was rained out, so yeah, I'm going to be really hungry during the show.
Everything was rained out. How about you, Anais? And one particular reason that I invited Anais to come is I wanted to hear not just the story of someone who was born here. I was born here. Greg was born here. But somebody born in another country who came here, and this is your adopted country, is your celebration of July 4th and how you have adopted it. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for the invitation to be in this wonderful storytelling space. Thank you to everybody who makes it possible, and thank you to our listeners for listening to us. For me, the 4th of July celebration is very special because I grew up in a country where the Day of Independence is celebrated in a very simple way, with military parades. You have to have your flag out. And essentially, you don't have this food and this decoration festival type of atmosphere going on. So when I came to the States to do my residency in pathology back in the late 1980s, I was terrified that I was going to spend my first 4th of July by myself or with the three other residents that I had that we were basically always like starving wolves, you know? And I was thinking, oh gosh, we're going to be like wandering around the Charles River Esplanade looking for food. You know, these guys are most likely are going to be drinking. I don't drink, so I'm going to be going out with these people who are going to be drinking. I don't drink, no food. And the end of everything is going to be a beautiful firework display, and that's going to be it for me. But all of a sudden, the miracle, because there's always a miracle. And I feel that here in the States, there is always that miracle. Like in the American movies, it happens. So on July the 3rd, this very proper lady, who used to be the executive administrative assistant of the chief of hematopathology, Dr. Richard Nyman, shows up with this invitation. Anais, we would like to have you over, so my husband will pick you up. You have to take the red line all the way to the end, to Braintree, and he will pick you up. First of all, I say, is this guy really going to show up? That was my first thing, you know, because I was imagining my father being sent to pick somebody up at the train station. Most likely he was going to be late. Well, second miracle, the guy show up on time. And then I ended in this beautiful town called Norwell, Massachusetts, which is in the south shores of Massachusetts, what has been called the Irish Riviera. This is a small town that is truly beautiful, just with a beautiful display of colonial American houses with typical white picket fences. And I ended having my first 4th of July there with this house that was basically decorated like a Martha Stewart house. A wonderful family who were extremely generous, extremely gracious, and gave me the gift of my first 4th of July, which was essentially perfect. The food was a basic menu of beautiful Americana food. You know, we had barbecue meats. They had a wonderful corn souffle. For me, that was like heaven. It was like eating a cloud. They had potato salad, and they had this incredible trifle, you know, like, for me, that was like something you will see in a shop, you know. It was absolutely beautiful and delicious. And to top it off, my favorite, apple pie.
Oh, apple
so
pie.
It was a apple wonderful pie. 4th of July. And considering that I was so afraid of being by myself, this was just a gift.
Well, they sound like wonderful people to have realized that you needed company.
Yeah. So whatever they are now, Gene and Tom Scammell, thank you.
Wonderful people. They sound like wonderful cooks.
Both.
Absolutely.
Both. And, you know, I was listening to the menu because I thought it's either going to be fried chicken or barbecue.
No.
But there's got to be potato salad.
Yes, you know, there was potato salad.
That Americans don't die of ptomaine poisoning on July 5th is a miracle because we all have potato salad and we usually have it outside and it's been sitting there for hours.
You know, and they had this watermelons, you know, in Venezuela, the watermelons are kind of small. And here they were like this huge, and, you know, the triangles of watermelons were like, they were just so absolutely perfect. And lemonade. You know,
oh, lemonade, yes.
Mm-hmm. One thing I love about your story is sort of what you said about a miracle always being around the corner is we've all had those occasions, not necessarily just on holiday, but when you know you're going to have a crummy weekend or everyone else is doing something special and you're not. And when, you know, that miracle lands on you, it makes it that much more special, you know, and reminds you that maybe we can do that for someone else because you know what it means.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. And humanity, you know, just to keep that in mind, that there is somebody out there that may be lonesome.
Yes.
And being alone.
I guarantee you there is somebody out there within your circle who is.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter even if they have a smile on their face.
And we have a lot of foreign trainees. Mm-hmm. And many of them have been in this country for a long time. Most have, in fact, because we train people after their early training and specialty training. But I try to find out, you know, and when I get to know one of them, do you have plans, you know, are you doing something? Because I was a foreign student in England, and there's nothing worse than waking up and getting to work and saying, oh, I didn't know it was a bank holiday today. Where is everybody? They're out at the countryside.
They're having fun.
They're having fun with their family and friends.
And eating good food.
And yes, and well, in England, but in the U.S., definitely. Oh, so Greg, tell us about a special 4th of July for you.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I love the 4th of July. It just, I always have. So it's hard to pick just one. But I'll do my best. You know, when I was a kid, and some of you have heard me talk before about the fact that as a young kid, I was obsessed with Maxine Messenger's column in Houston, what the society set was doing, what all these glamorous celebrities were doing, and everything that was glamorous in Houston in the 1970s and 80s seemed to concentrate around Tony's restaurant. You know, for a long time, it was the only five-star restaurant in Texas. And I was kind of obsessed with it because it was so much more glamorous than my daily family life. It was so much more exciting. And I knew a terrifying amount about this place because I was kind of obsessed. And when I got to college, or when I was in college, one summer I came back and I just couldn't find a job. And I was driving around in a car without air conditioning. And I drove by Tony's when it was on Post Oak. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go ask for an application just so I can go inside Tony's and get a glass of water and just see what it's like. I'd only been in once several years before when I was about 13 or 14. My mother and her partner, Tina, drove me past Tony's, and they said, go in and ask for directions just so you can see what it looks like. And I'm telling you, it was more glamorous than I thought it was going to be. So I'm sitting there filling out the application. I'm just taking it all in. And this gentleman in a tuxedo comes up, and he says, what position are you applying for? Well, I'd worked in an ice cream store all through junior high and high school, but I didn't know anything about restaurants. I knew I wasn't qualified to be a busboy or a bartender or a waiter. I figured waiters made the most money, so I said, waiter. And he goes, all right, finish filling that out and be here at 10 o'clock in the morning for an interview. I could not believe they were actually going to interview me. And I was so relaxed because there was no possibility of me getting this job. I wasn't at all nervous. So I go in and I meet with the maitre d', a wonderful man named Tino Escobedo. And we're talking and, you know, he asked me, why would I want to work at Tony's? And I start talking to him about the history of Tony's, their guests, dishes they've served, occasions that have been there. I think I freaked him out a little bit. And he said,
a stalker.
And he said, well, so could you be here at 10:30 tomorrow morning? And do you have a tuxedo? I was an actor. And I said, sir, I have two tuxedos. And he goes, all right, be here at 10:30. And we keep talking. And I didn't realize that he had given me the job. And I just start laughing hysterically. The only time in my life I've reacted this way, I could not stop laughing. And I said, did you just give me a job? He goes, yeah, should I not have? I was like, no, 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 I'm glad you did. And I absolutely loved working at Tony's. One of the things I loved about it was Tony Vallone treated the staff as family. It was like having a bunch of rowdy boys. And it was fun. But one thing I also learned was, you know, the glamour of Tony's was just like theater. A lot of effort went in. You know, that's not daily life. You know, I mean, a lot of hard work goes into making it appear glamorous for a few hours every night. And, but everything else, it was great. The employee meals there. Can you imagine the employee meals at Tony's? They could have just given us a sandwich, but no. This was in the days before we knew that you weren't supposed to be eating veal, that, you know, wasn't. So I was guilt-free. We had veal all the time and just these great meals. And then the schedule came out for July 4th. I was working July 4th. That did not thrill me. You know, I love July 4th, and my family does, you know, it's always a big occasion. As a matter of fact, when I was in junior high, I think July 4th was cemented as a special holiday for us when my mother and her partner came up with the Friendswood Marching Kazoo Band. So every child, animal, adult, you know, that wanted to be in the parade could do it. It's still something that makes me smile. But July 4th is a special family time, and I didn't want to miss it by waiting tables. And then I found out my mother and her partner at the time had a sailboat, and they were going to go sail around the Gulf, and they were going to have all this great food on board. Well, I was not a happy camper. I was sulking around Tony's. And, you know, I never thought I'd be in a position to be sulking about having to work at Tony's on a given night. And finally, the maitre d' come up and he said, will you be in a better mood if I let you go home? I was like, yes. And this was in the days before cell phones. So I got in my car and I raced from Tony's down to Kima, down to the sailboat. And again, there were no cell phones, but they were just kind of waiting to see if I could make it. So I go running. I'm the only person down in Kima with a tuxedo on. And I go running down. I jump on the boat. And, you know, I'm with my mother and her friends and some special friends of mine. They pour me a glass of champagne, and they bring out, I should say this was a boat full of feminists, and so they bring out an annual cake they have every year, their Susan B. Anthony cake, of which one of the women said years before, her young daughter said, think all over America tonight, people are eating their Susan B. Anthony cakes. But as we're going out into the Gulf, I mean, I realize, yes, glamour and excitement is fun, but it's also artificial. What's real is being with the people you love, you know, on a special day. And yeah, we were floating out having champagne in the Gulf. That was nice, but it was really just the community, the food, the Susan B. Anthony cake that made me feel, make that one of the most special July 4th holidays I've ever had.
Oh, those are both wonderful stories. I don't think I could top them. What can I say that I remember about July 4th? And one of the things I really remember as a little girl is July 4th, making homemade ice cream at my aunt and uncle's house, and being very concerned. If anybody here remembers how you made ice cream in those days, you hand cranked it.
Oh, yeah.
And you were in...
For a long time.
A long time. Yeah, you passed it around to the little kids first, you know, because they have lots of energy. And it's sitting...
Well, that's what they were doing.
Yes. And it's sitting in salt.
Yeah.
Because with the salt, it'll get colder than with water. And I kept asking my mother, why is that salt there? And I was so worried that the ice cream was going to get salted.
I remember feeling that way. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, no, this wouldn't work. But that's one of my biggest memories of 4th of July is homemade ice cream. Peach was my uncle's favorite flavor.
I am already. We're only 20 minutes into the show, and I'm getting so hungry.
Yes. Well, you'll just get hungrier. So this is Mary Edgerton, your co-host tonight on So What's Your Story, here on 90.1 KPFT, Pacifica Radio in Houston, or kpft.org, live streaming anywhere in the ether. I have with me here in the station two great storytellers, Anais Malpica and Greg Audell. But actually, we also have Hank, our show's founder. And I think Hank has something to say about his experiences with July the 4th and food.
Well, actually, I don't know if you'd call this an experience, but it is a quick story, and I'm getting hungry, too. But, you know, I was raised on food that could kill anybody before they're 6 years old. I just needed you to know that. I mean, it was all fat and salt, and I always thought that was good for you. So, for example, our idea of a typical diet was schmaltz on rye. Now, schmaltz is something that Bobby Flay uses. He makes clear that it's very flavorful. But schmaltz is chicken fat, and my favorite snack was to have that on rye bread. Then you put some hard salami. It has to be hard salami. And salt. That was my typical snack.
Hank, we're already frowning out here, grimacing at the thought.
Yeah, why not? But then again, you know, my grandmother would say, what do you people know? You're Gentiles. You have no taste. But so in any event, when it came to 4th of July, that was really, really fun for me because that was a time when I was given what was called American food. And American food is what you would expect it to be. French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers. And hamburgers were very interesting in our home because for many years, I would say until I was probably 7 or 8 years old, I believed that hamburgers were, that the hamburger was a name of a person who was very rich because his name was on the windows of all these restaurants. My grandfather used to go for a walk in the neighborhood, true story, and he would come back and he would say, I don't know who this hamburger guy is, but I'll tell you, he owns more restaurants than I have ever seen in my life because every place had hamburger on it. And then, obviously, we quickly learned that it was a kind of a sandwich and not a person's name. But, you know, I loved hot dogs and hamburgers. I loved hot dogs and hamburgers because they told me that it was the 4th of July. And I don't want to have to be really corny about it, but, you know, the 4th of July is a holiday where we have to remember about our independence. And my grandparents, who were so incredibly proud about living in this country, as you might imagine, made a big deal out of that. And they insisted that we would eat hamburgers and hot dogs and celebrate independency and listen to firecrackers and watch Lawrence Welk. I don't know whatever we did that night. But the thing is that it was a very important holiday for them because they were immigrants. They were survivors. And to them, this country meant everything. So it was a very warm experience combined with eating our traditional 4th of July foods.
That's wow. a wonderful story. And I think that brings to mind for me something very important at a time when there's so much talk about immigrants is to realize we're the children of immigrants. Anais right here is an immigrant. Mm-hmm. And yet we're all celebrating July the 4th and very happy with there's nothing wrong with immigrants in our country. We've been immigrants from the beginning. So, just making that statement. I do want to do a little survey. You know, when I was growing up, there was this, are you a Beatles person or a Rolling Stones person? You know, Beatles, Rolling Stones. Okay, I have one. Okay, we're going to start with you, Tatiana. Hot dog or hamburgers?
Hamburger.
Okay, Hank?
Oh, I have to say hot dog.
Okay. Anais?
Hamburger.
Greg?
I have to choose?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with cheeseburger, but it's a very close call.
Well, I'm going to say hamburger, but I have
the options. Cheeseburger wasn't even an option.
It's always an option.
So I have to tell you a little story on hamburgers and hot dogs that for some reason, when I was pregnant with my oldest daughter, I craved hot dogs. And I tolerate hot dogs. Actually, I've come to like hot dogs, especially good hot dogs. But I tolerated hot dogs and loved hamburgers. And during that pregnancy, I couldn't stop eating hot dogs. And Alexandra, who's very food picky, eats hot dogs. That's probably 75% of what she wants to eat.
So she, I like her.
She votes for the, for the hot dog. Yeah. Yeah. So some of the other foods I remember were curry chicken, potato salad. And then, of course, the other thing that I have to say I remember, because you mentioned your kazoo parade, which was all of Friendswood?
Well, yeah, it was for the Friendswood. Friendswood, I think, has the oldest July 4th parade in the country, if I'm not mistaken.
And so what did she have, a kazoo marching band
yep.
in the parade? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, in my family, my mother and her two sisters often used July 4th as a reunion date for the family, which was fun. My aunt had a ranch house in the countryside, and of course there would be barbecue and potato salad and each of the sisters would compete with each other with their own versions of the potato salad and so on.
I love it when good cooks compete.
Isn't it
yes,
the greatest?
Yes, I encourage competition.
Definitely. But the fact that my Aunt Jean was a good Catholic, she was not only hosting the event, but she had 9 children, a large number of grandchildren, by then several great-grandchildren, and they were all there to help out. And then we had my aunt's family of 4, including their children, my aunt's grandchildren, and then our family. And we had enough people. We had our very own private 4th of July parade right out there. Of course, one year, there was a bit of a riot when one little boy swung around and punched another. I don't know what happened. Somebody got out of line in the parade, and he turned around and punched the one behind him, and then that boy's brother punched him, and then pretty soon, it was just like in the comic strips, that just tumble of dirt and boys and everything, and actually, 2 of those boys were my responsibility, so... It was tough, but I'm happy to say that they're all good friends, grown up now, married, decent people, not punching each other. Okay, well, now back in the engineer's room, how are y'all doing, Nicole and Tatiana?
I'm doing great.
And what'd you do today for July 4th?
Unfortunately, I just worked all day.
Oh!
Not really quite eventful.
It was. Did you eat anything special today?
No, haven't been able to.
Guys, we are very lame this July 4th. Yeah. We need to fix this.
we might have to go out.
I was going to say, I think we may need to go out after this, guys.
Yeah, we might have to go to a dessert place. Mm. And Nicole, what'd you do?
I went to sleep.
We're just getting more exciting here on So What's Your Story?
I'm the most exciting person here, but today. But yeah, I went to sleep. It was raining. You know, my house is empty. It's just myself and my wonderful, lovely heating blanket. And,
you
know,
curled up.
That was it.
Oh, you should be curled up at home in your heating blanket listening to these stories.
You know, it was almost that way because when I woke up, I was like, number one, where am I? And then, you know, when you go in that deep sleep sometimes, yeah. And I guess my body needed the rest. I've just been so busy. And I guess I just really needed it. And that's all I did.
Well, I do remember a very rainy July 4th, much like this one. And it was 1976. I had just graduated from college. I'd probably spent every July 4th up until then at home in Rio Grande City, where we did not have city fireworks. I don't even think we had a parade. School was out, so there was no marching band. And many of our students were migrant farm workers, so a lot of the students were gone. And so we, of course, had our own meal, and then we kids, you could buy fireworks everywhere, would go out and light fireworks. And, of course, it's a very dry area, so one of the things that we learned was to take bottle rockets and shoot them into the water so that they didn't start a fire.
Very responsible,
very responsible.
Pyromaniacs.
Yes. And then we would go over by one of the bridges, the railroad bridge leading out of town, and try to aim our bottle rocket so that it would explode. We'd put it in a Coke bottle, shoot it in, and it would explode underneath the bridge, and it would make this wonderful thudding sound under the water, and then if it reverberated under the bridge, you know, you were the hot one if you aimed correctly. And then my final July 4th, the year that I graduated from college, I said to my parents, I'm going to go back and spend it in Austin with my buddies at UT, where I had graduated, and I was getting ready to go to England for 3 years, and I said, this is my last 4th of July for 3 years, and I want to see some real fireworks. And the city of Austin, it was 1976, you know, it was the 200th anniversary. They were going to have the best fireworks ever, ever, forever, and ever, and, you know, it was going to be incredible. And I got there, and it rained all day. And they said, that's okay, we'll save the fireworks and have them next year. And I'm thinking, but next year I'm going to be across the ocean where they don't celebrate July the 4th. So we said, what can we do to make our picnic meaningful? So we just gathered up all our fried chicken and potato salad, and we went...
Oh, yeah.
We went over to the state capitol building, which was open. We took in folding chairs, and we planted ourselves there in the lobby, and we had our picnic right there. Alcohol-free.
You know, I don't know. You touched on something there that a lot of people don't realize. When we were younger, the Capitol was open 24/7. Yeah. And I believe it was when Bill Hobby's daughter's boyfriend died in a fire in the lieutenant governor's apartment that they realized they never really had any idea how many people were in the Capitol at any time. And so it's not that way. But when I was in college, that was something you did. You would go to the Capitol at 3 a.m.
You know, I was just thinking today about that story, and I was thinking, I know we went to the Capitol. I
Absolutely.
Have pictures of us sitting there in the rotunda of the Capitol, but how come it was open on a holiday? So thanks for
It was always open. Yeah, it was. That was a special thing about it.
Yes, yes. Well, it made it special for us, and it made it special for me with my. And we just thought we were the cat's meow, you know, like we've solved this problem. We have brought our holiday to the Capitol.
I like that.
So we are here on So What's Your Story, broadcast live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, or live streaming from kpft.org anywhere in the ether. And I mean the ether in the very traditional sense of the word. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be a very important part of the Houston storytelling scene. And folks, this scene is flooded with storytelling. We may be the only live radio short storytelling show in Houston, but we have lots of company, don't we? So, Nicole.
Yes.
Well, tell us about some of our company.
What was that?
I just wanted to sound sassy. You know me. You just never know what
sassy.
To expect. Well, you know, Mary, first let me say something about our show. If you don't have a radio to our listeners, it's no excuse for you missing it because you can listen to us live streaming on kpft.org or with Facebook Live on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And yes, there are other important storytelling venues in and around town. So let's start with the Houston Storytellers Guild. You can join them because this is the best group to work with to start cultivating your storytelling talent. Just get to their monthly story swaps held on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. So go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org, for upcoming events and all of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, even mine, listed on the menu under radio programs.
Hey, hey. And I just want to emphasize that, yes, you can listen to our old shows. And don't worry about repetition. You know what? I was making dinner for myself tonight, and I said, And I just put up HoustonStorytellers.org radio show, and I said, you know, I'm going to have Greg on as a guest. I want to get Greg's style down. And I rolled down to your show with Derek on March 28th.
Oh, nice.
And played that. Very nice show.
Thank you.
So, I don't mean to interrupt.
No problem, because I was listening to the show yesterday, too, in my Uber car.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I had my passengers. And one of my passengers was like, what is that? And I was like, well, let me tell you about the hottest storytelling show around. You know,
nice,
so
Nicole.
I told her, and it was pretty cool.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I want to say about these different opportunities Nicole talked about, like the Houston Storytellers Guild, is with the exception of Hank, I don't think anyone associated with the show was telling stories 4 years ago on any formal basis. And it's something I want you to know, that you do have a story in you. And you know, if you're just not quite sure how to tell it or how to get it out, these different venues are gems. You know, you are going to meet some of the best storytellers in the state. Listen to how they do it, share their story, and they can help make you a better storyteller. And most importantly, I think to be a better storyteller is to be a more comfortable storyteller. And so I really encourage you, because storytelling has certainly been one of the great blessings of my life that I didn't see coming around the corner 4 years ago. You know, it was something I thought would be cool, but I didn't know how to go about it. And when the opportunity came, I just want others to avail themselves of that very special opportunity.
Greg is being humble. He was an Uber driver who decided to follow his rider into the moth.
That is true.
Not knowing what was going on, put his name in the bag, and was the Story Slam winner that night.
Well, thank you. It was just a nice convergence of events. But I was also lucky to be called first, so I didn't have time to get nervous. You know, and I didn't really I had never seen anyone else do. I'd heard the moth on the radio, but I'd never seen anyone else on stage. So that's the one time I was really glad I went first, because by the time I was nervous, it was already over.
Ah, okay. There's a tip for the teller. These are the good things about going first. I'm always terrified of going first.
It sounds like, Greg, you follow a lot of people. But anyways.
Back to the subject. Storytellers do wander.
Yes, they do. But if you are wondering, you know, what we're doing in our studio, you can check us out, too, on our YouTube program, on our YouTube channel. You can check out our program clips there and tell us what you think about our shows or suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And we promise to get back to you. And make sure you share our page with your friends, and oh, we'd love it if you like us before you leave. We also don't want you to miss our friends at the Mauve, and that's at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, and the next one will be July 10th, and the theme is age. Ooh, Mary, Hank.
Hey.
Are you both prepared?
Sorry. I'm sorry. Age is ageless.
I don't
age
participate
is ageless.
In
you
aging.
Can do age. Age is ageless. Okay. And what's happening next week at 8 p.m. here on KPFT 90.1 in Storytelling Land?
Well, you know, Greg will be hosting our July 11th show, which is next week. So, hey, Greg, do you want to say anything about that upcoming show, or is it too closely guarded?
It is
of
a closely
secret?
Guarded secret right now, but
like
it's going
to be a very
good show.
Like the family potato salad recipe? You don't
like
want
my cheesecake recipes.
Yeah.
But I do have an important announcement about next week. We are kicking off the KPFT Fund Drive. It's a time when all of you tell us to continue the terrific programming on KPFT Pacifica Radio, to which this station is affiliated. It is entirely listener-sponsored. And calling us next week at 713-526-5738 during our July 11th, 18th, and 25th programs, we'll tell Pacifica that live storytelling is a part of our Houston community and needs to continue. Because of past donations, So What's Your Story has evolved from a once-a-month program to a primetime weekly program. So support what works. Call us or go online at kpft.org, then select donations, select a form of payment, and this is very important, scroll down to So What's Your Story as your weekly favorite show, and we would very much appreciate it. But please do tune in, because you know we make every effort to have wonderful shows just like every week during Pledge Drive. We're not going to spend the whole hour asking you for money, so don't avoid us.
And unless you tell us otherwise, we're going to thank you on the air, because we appreciate your support from the bottoms of our heart. So please support us and keep us on the air. You would never want to miss storytelling time. All right, so back to our show. And back to one of our themes here, which is food in July 4th. Food has always played a central role in holiday get-togethers. And in her book, Cuisine and Culture, A History of Food and People, Linda Civitello talks about the first celebration of Americans' birthday. So if you remember, I mentioned John Adams. He and his wife, Abigail, along with thousands of other Americans on the East Coast, were very fond of turtle soup. Yep, you heard it right. Green turtle soup. A little chewy, a little tasty, softened in the broth. On July 4th, 1776, it is said that John and Abigail had their first of many traditional Independence Day meals, starting with turtle soup, accompanied by poached salmon with egg sauce, green peas, boiled potatoes, Indian pudding called apple pandowdy. Now, going back to the topic of turtle soup, that was the most popular meal back in those days. So much so that restaurants would have to post the times on their windows when the favorite soup would be available to eat. And if you wanted to make your own, many grocery stores back then would supply you with the necessary ingredients. Well, fortunately, the popularity of the dish diminished as concern about protecting the species of the turtle grew. So today, if you're still craving the historic dish, I will say under my breath, there are restaurants in New Orleans that serve it with turtle, but most Americans in the South will make mock turtle soup with veal meat or perhaps calves' heads to get the same consistency, is what they say. Now, the traditional July 4th fare has moved on from turtle soup to our more popularized dogs and burgers, and for good reason. Early settlers coming out west wanted to make use of available livestock, so they prepared a cuisine It seems kind of strange to refer to hot dogs and hamburgers as cuisine when I think of cuisine as something very fancy. But they prepared a cuisine that resembled our favorite Bun Finley treats. So let's talk a little bit just about food and what we eat on July 4th. And I'm going to start with you, Anais. Tell me about something you like to eat, a story about something you like to eat or make for July 4th, or one of your experiences.
Well, I love to eat whatever my dear husband Andrew cooks. And usually he will prepare like these wonderful hamburgers. A secret recipe, though. So I cannot just explain how he makes it, because it's a very special way that he has.
We all have our secret. On holidays, recipes are a well-kept secret.
And I will take care of an old-fashioned apple pie, and I get my recipe from a Williams-Sonoma book. And usually I get the help from my youngest son, Sebastian, who is very precise when it comes to cutting this apple, which is that they have to be big enough to basically fill that pie with goodness. You cut into it and it's like the apples just come out crisp and delicious. So I love that basic traditional meal with good hamburgers, French fries, and a good apple pie, old-fashioned apple pie.
Was there another dessert you ever tried to make? Like a rhubarb?
Yes. You know, when you have been surrounded by good cooks, it's very difficult to be a good cook unless you follow their steps. And I have this tendency to try to learn things fast, almost like a quick micromastering. So I try to go from the novice level or neophyte level to intermediate level without...
Nothing in between.
Nothing in between.
0 to 60.
Exactly. So I thought that I could master a dessert called baba rum. And if you check any cookbook, will tell you that it's an intermediate level type of dessert. But I say, I can do it. So I bought all my ingredients, and being me, I went for the most expensive ingredients to ensure the quality of the dessert. And then after I had lined up all my ingredients and I started to make the batter, my brother pointed out that they didn't have the right pan. And I said, what do they call for? I said, well, they call for a two pan and you don't have one. So what are you going to do now? I said, well, what kind of pan do we have here? He said, well, we have no pan for this amount of batter that you have made already. So we started to check around all the places in the kitchen. Finally, we found a can of Danish cooked ham. And we decided to pour the batter there. But we needed something to make the hole. So I came up with this idea of putting a can with potatoes that had been wrapped in aluminum foil to make that hole that was required for this dessert. Well, everything looked good until we put it in the oven and the butter started to bake. And then the can tipped over. It was a total disaster. At the end, the only thing that we could eat were the potatoes. And that created this aversion for complex French desserts, you know, that I thought that I could really micromaster at full speed.
Did you ever try it again?
No, because usually when I get traumatized, I don't want to try it again. So I totally switch. You know, I don't have that persistence. Let me try again. No. So
I'd be traumatized if I was expecting dessert and got potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is pretty traumatic. I had this beautiful dessert I tried to make, and oh gosh, it was gorgeous. And I think I tried it 3 or 4 times before I gave up. You make this white cake, and you make it very high, so you slice it into 4 levels. So my then husband was very good at even slicing, because I thought, oh, if I cut this thing, it's going to be up, down, over, or somewhat uneven. And then you whip cream, and you melt this white chocolate. And you have to let the chocolate cool enough, and you layer that on the cake layers. And then you wait till that cools enough, and you put the whipped cream in. Well, I it wasn't that I was 0 to 60 in terms of technique. I was 0 to 60 in terms of, I need to eat this thing, so I need to finish it early. Okay, so now I have the chocolate on. It hasn't quite cooled enough. And I'm putting on whipped cream and putting on another layer of cake and putting on whipped cream. And the first layer is just slipping off the other as the whipped cream is melting off the white chocolate. I've done that 3 times in a row, and I put that recipe away.
Did you ever make it correctly?
No.
Oh.
So why you just didn't let it cool all the way first? And then if you tried it 3 times, you knew what the problem was.
You might think. Okay, but I'm gonna come back with a little story about a recipe that did work out. So I gave my youngest daughter some money to buy a book at her book school fair when she was in kindergarten. And I expected her to buy her own book. She loved books. She loved to be read to. She was starting to read. She loved to read. She loved all of the reindeer movies. And so she loved any book that was about reindeers and Santa Claus. And she went and she came back. And instead of a book for herself, she had a book for me. And it was called Celebrating the Red, White, and Blue. And it had ideas on crafts, decorating, and then most importantly, food. And this was such a sweet surprise. I was so touched by it. And so I said, well, let's look for a recipe. And so they had an incredible pie recipe that was a combination of lemon icebox pie for the custard with blueberries and raspberries on top. But we modified it. So first we did a graham cracker crust instead of a cookie crust. And then we put melted chocolate on top of that. And this time, yes, we let it cool. And it kind of sank down into the graham cracker. It made a kind of chocolate graham cracker crust. And then we made the lemon icebox and put on top of that. Oh, no, I forget. We put the blueberries in on top of the chocolate, then the lemon icebox. And then since my family's tradition was to have strawberry shortcake, I said, well, instead of doing the raspberries, let's do whipped cream and strawberries on top. Oh, my God. That's a family recipe for forever. It was delicious. And it worked. But I did let the chocolate warm up. I mean, cool off. All right. This has been great. Been a great discussion about food, holidays, and Independence Day. And I'd like to read a short story now from Dan Rather's memoir. I think most people out there know Dan Rather. He's a reporter since I was a kid. And been in and out of TV, was CBS's anchor for a long time, and now has a section he calls News and Guts on Facebook. And he was writing this week about his fond memories of July the 4th and his concerns about the country at a time when political parties and political beliefs seem to be at such odds with each other. And I myself struggle with the conflicts that our nation faces today. And I have vowed not to celebrate July 4th. This has been a reflection of July 4th until the families on the border are reunited. So today's been a reflection for me with y'all. And I'd like to read Dan Rather's story in his own words. He grew up here in the Houston area. So it starts here. When I was a young boy, we didn't have much in the way of material possessions. But around 1940 or 41, we got our first family car, a heavily used 1938 Oldsmobile that I can still see so clearly in my mind's eye. Its previous owner had lived along the Gulf of Mexico, and it was thus considered a coastal car, which meant it was rusted, especially along the lower left side. Its engine had also thrown a rod, blowing a big hole in the engine block, which had been patched. It was a bit of a rolling wreck, but I didn't see it as anything but beautiful. In my neighborhood, the notion of a family vacation was an unheard-of luxury, something you might see in the movies but never expected to experience yourself. Yet that year, as the 4th of July approached, my mother had the idea of driving to the beach in Galveston to see the fireworks over the Gulf of Mexico. My father was a little unsure of trusting the new car to take his young family on the round trip of roughly 100 miles, but my mother was persuasive. So when the morning of the 4th arrived, I was giddy with anticipation. A trip from Houston to Galveston these days is relatively easy. At that time, it was a big deal. There were no freeways, so we took the two-lane coastal road, and I remember how hot the day was. The humidity must have been approaching 100%. All the heat was coming into the car through the windows because we didn't have air conditioning, so all our car windows were down. And to help the time pass, my mother had us sing patriotic songs. First and foremost was America the Beautiful. She always thought it should have been made the national anthem, as it is less militaristic than the Star Spangled Banner and easier to sing. And I've inherited that opinion. We did sing the Star Spangled Banner too, and then there was a debate in the car about whether we should stop so we could get out and stand while we were singing. We ultimately decided that we should probably keep going, our hands over our hearts as we sang. As proud Texans, we included several state songs in our repertoire: Texas, Our Texas, Beautiful Texas, and The Yellow Rose of Texas. I remember singing my heart out, and we repeated the songs over and over again, stopping to make sure my little brother and sister could learn the lyrics. When we finally arrived in Galveston, it seemed magical. I can still taste the salt air and see the sun flickering on the rippling water of the Gulf. As we sat on the seawall that had been built after the great hurricane of 1900, I thought this work of civil engineering was so marvelous it might as well have been the Great Wall of China. We played on the beach, and when the sun went down, we watched the fireworks. In retrospect, this was probably a modest show, low budget, low altitude, but I was transfixed. I had never seen anything like it. I oohed and aahed at the starlit night. I knew, after all, that the stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Texas. So for anybody who's not a native Texan, that's one of our lines in one of our state songs. We had no money for the extravagances of a hotel, so the five of us slept in the car, curling up every which way. As we drove back the next morning, we were all a little stiff, but for that moment, life seemed perfect. I have often wished I could have bottled that day to taste its sweet innocence once more. I had no way of knowing then that the country would soon be engulfed in war, that some of the happy families we saw strolling the beach would have fathers go off to battle and never return. I didn't know that I would soon be stricken with rheumatic fever and confined to my bed, and I couldn't have anticipated that my parents, whom I can still picture sitting contentedly in the front seat, would pass away relatively early in my life. All I knew then was that I liked the feel of the road and the sight of the scenery going past, and I liked going places, and I still do.
What a wonderful story. Wonderful. One thing I love about it is the understanding that you better enjoy right now, because that's all you got, you know. And you don't know if the people you love are going to be with you tomorrow. So you better enjoy today, even if you're sleeping five people in a car.
How about you, Anais?
I totally agree with him. It's just a moment, the present, what essentially counts.
I love that idea of bottling a memory, because it.
Yes.
Have you ever remembered a memory and you can taste the taste in your mouth?
Oh, yes.
And the air feels different. And it evokes this whole different sense. And I
Absolutely.
Have memories I've bottled and hope to continue to bottle more.
And sometimes you can taste something and it brings back all the memories from decades ago.
Speaking of tasting, yes. And they say when you're wine tasting that your emotions affect your tasting of the wine.
Tell you what, I'll tell you a very brief story about when I first met Dan Rather the very first time. It was the 1988 Democratic Convention. I was this college kid, and Dan Rather was doing a story. You know, we were all standing around watching him. It was very exciting. They end the story. Dan Rather walks up to me, puts his hand on my shoulder, and he says, "Well, I am very pleased to meet you. I've really been looking forward to getting a chance to visit with you." I had absolutely no idea why Dan Rather was looking forward to visiting with me or how he knew who I was. And finally, a young person came up, tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Sir, that's not him." And he said, "Well, who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm Greg Audell from Houston, Texas, sir." He goes, "Well, I'm glad to meet you too."
That was a great recovery for Dan.
Yeah, it was great. And I felt great. I told all my friends Dan Rather was excited to meet me.
Yeah, that was actually quite an exciting convention for him, too. That was, I think he went down during that convention. I think there was some scuffle, and he was taken down. You'll have to read about it. So, any of y'all want to say something special? Say something to anybody in Radioland?
Well, I think I'd like to say happy July 4th to my mother, who always made it a very special and delicious occasion. And to Tina, who taught me how to make homemade ice cream, a skill that I still practice to this day.
I would like to say thank you to Andrew, who is here with us, for 28 years of wonderful meals. To a couple who essentially have taught me a lot about Italian cuisine, Elizabeth and Guido Stefanelli, wonderful friends, more than friends, essentially family. All our holidays are celebrated together, and they have really provided us with beautiful memories. Also to Kinan Vu, colleague from ours at MD Anderson, a true foodie.
Oh, she's a foodie.
Who goes throughout Europe to the most incredible little towns and comes back with treasures like Marco Polo. She comes with marzipan paste, pistachio paste, mustard, marmalades, things that you have never seen. And it's like a whole world that you learn every day that you she brings something new.
Kim has been on the show.
Kim has been on the show.
She told us about immigrating from Vietnam.
Friends, which is incredible.
Yes, yes. And introduced me to the Portuguese cataplana, which is delicious.
And friends, as you share your food and your table during these holidays, I would encourage you to invite someone else. Think about that person that probably doesn't have anyone to celebrate it with, or, you know, who you can share your circle with. But you know what's also awesome? If you can share stories with each other. Listen to their stories and tell yours, because that's how you really get to know people.
This is true. This is true.
Just think, I was one of those.
Yes.
Back in 1987, when the Scammels gave me my perfect 4th of July.
You know, wow. I have to say, when you were first telling me, I was trying to find the camels. I was trying to find the camels, and I started Googling the camels, and I'm thinking, and she says, I'm Googling the camels in Massachusetts, and I'm thinking, why were you Googling camels in Massachusetts? Did somebody bring camels to Massachusetts? But the family name. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up. It's been fun. So, listeners, don't you dare move, because Wild Bill and the Vinyl Avenger are ready in the wings to share their cool classics with you. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land's made for you and me. Well, I roamed and I rambled, I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of the Diamond Desert, while all around me a voice was sounding, saying, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. While the sun came shining and I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, a fog was lifting, and a voice was chanting, this land is made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is mine.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
You are listening to KPFT Houston.